Target. This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver and Andrew Smith. Later, Brian Lynn presents this week's science report. We close with the next part of our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
A French power producer expects its hydrogen energy power station in Namibia to produce electricity by 2024. A top company official for HDF Energy announced the plan for the Southern African country recently. The hydrogen power plant in Namibia would be Africa's first. The Swakopmund project is expected to cost about $181 million. Once operational, the company said, it will supply electrical power 24 hours a day throughout the year. It will increase the electricity supply to Namibia, which imports 40% of its power from neighboring South Africa. Namibia is one of the world's sunniest and least densely populated countries. It wants to be able to use its great potential for solar and wind energy to produce green hydrogen power. And Namibia wants to become a renewable energy center in Africa. Hydrogen power is considered green when it is made with renewable power, and it is seen as an important way to reduce carbon-based fuels in the energy industry. However, the technology remains untried and costlier than other forms of power. The project will use solar panels able to produce 85 megawatts of electricity. They will power electrolyzers that produce hydrogen, which can be stored. Electrolyzers produce hydrogen by using electricity to separate hydrogen from oxygen in water. Nicholas LeCompte is HDF Energy Director for Southern Africa. He said, yearly we can produce 142 gigawatt hours, enough for 142,000 inhabitants, and that is conservative. HDF Energy is also considering new projects across Africa and in other parts of the world. LeCompte told Reuters, soon after Southern Africa, you will see HDF developing projects in East Africa. Another company is in talks with Namibia's government to secure an agreement for a planned hydrogen project. Hyphen Hydrogen Energy is registered in Namibia. It is proposing a $10 billion project to produce 350,000 tons of green hydrogen a year before 2030. It will be for markets near Namibia and around the world. European Union and Namibian officials said the EU also plans a deal with the country to support its green hydrogen industry. European nations are trying to reduce their dependence on Russian energy. The German government has already agreed to invest $41.8 million in Namibia's green hydrogen plan. And Belgian and Dutch companies are also operating in the country in that field. I'm Katie Weaver.
The search for alternatives to Russian energy sources during the war in Ukraine has renewed interest in small nuclear power stations. Supporters say the stations could provide lower-cost energy compared to larger stations. Critics, however, worry about the risks to the environment. They also worry that having more power stations will make it easier for some countries to build nuclear weapons. Small power stations are called small modular reactors, or SMRs for short. Modular means the components of the power stations can be built in a factory and then assembled where the station is to be built. The International Atomic Energy Agency, or IAEA, says more than 70 commercial SMR designs are being developed around the world. Because they are smaller and easier to build, SMRs are less costly than larger reactors. However, SMRs provide less energy. Large stations usually provide between 1,000 and 1,450 megawatts of electricity, while SMRs usually provide between 50 and 300 megawatts. Rolls-Royce is a company with plans to build SMRs. The company is based in Britain. The estimated cost of a Rolls-Royce SMR is $2.5 to $3.2 billion. The estimated time to build one is 5.5 years. The IAEA said that is 2 years faster than it took to build a normal nuclear plant between 2016 and 2021. By comparison, the estimated cost of building a 1,100-megawatt nuclear plant is between $6 billion and $9 billion. NuScale Power is an American company with plans to build SMRs. It is based in the state of Oregon. It plans to build its first SMR in the state of Idaho by 2029 or 2030. And it signed agreements last year with two Polish companies to study the possibility of building SMRs to power industry there. Poland wants to depend less on coal-fueled electricity production. Rolls-Royce aims to build its first stations in Britain within 6 years. Last month, Rolls-Royce SMR said that it signed a deal with a company in the Netherlands, ULC Energy, to consider building SMRs there. Rolls-Royce SMR spokesman Dan Gould said that because of the war in Ukraine, the reliance on gas imports and Russian energy sources has focused people's minds on energy security. Environmentalists argue that having more nuclear reactors will worsen the problem of how to dispose of nuclear waste. M.V. Ramana is a professor of public policy and global affairs at the University of British Columbia. He said that research suggests there is no proven way to make sure that nuclear waste will not escape in the future. Ramana said the heat generated by the waste could change rock formations where it's stored and let water leak. He said mining activities could make the storage place weaker. Critics also say that bringing SMRs to more countries increases the risk that they could build nuclear weapons. Professor Ramana says that one SMR could produce around 10 bombs worth of plutonium each year. Ramana said that a high-level reprocessing technology is not required to produce the amount of plutonium needed for weapons. I'm Andrew Smith.
The American Space Agency, NASA, is making final preparations to crash a spacecraft into an asteroid in the world's first planetary defense test. The mission is called the Double Asteroid Redirection Test, or DART. The DART spacecraft launched on its trip to the asteroid last November. On September 26th, it will aim to strike the asteroid to see how the crash affects the space object's path. The test is designed to demonstrate a possible method for changing the direction of asteroids considered threats to Earth. The mission's target will be an asteroid called Dimorphos, which is part of a two-body asteroid system. Dimorphos is a small moonlet that orbits a larger asteroid named Didymos. Didymos is about 780 meters across, while Dimorphos is 160 meters. The asteroid system does not present any danger to Earth. But NASA says it is being targeted as a more effective way to test the crash method instead of striking a single asteroid flying through space. The goal of the DART mission is to see how the spacecraft crash will redirect the asteroid's path and speed. The crash will happen about 11 million kilometers from Earth. Currently, Dimorphos completes one orbit around Didymos every 11 hours and 55 minutes. The separation between the centers of the two asteroids is 1.18 kilometers. The DART spacecraft will aim to hit Dimorphos nearly head-on. When this happens, it will shorten the time it takes the small asteroid moonlet to orbit Didymos by several minutes, NASA explains. Telescopes on Earth will measure the change in the orbital period. NASA engineers have said they are hoping for a change of at least 73 seconds for the mission to be considered a success. Earlier this month, NASA announced the DART spacecraft had gotten its first look at the asteroid system. A series of images were taken July 27th by an imaging instrument on the spacecraft. The images showed light given off by the Didymos system. NASA said at the time the images were captured, the spacecraft was about 32 million kilometers away from the two asteroids. This made it difficult to see much of the Didymos system. But after the pictures were combined and examined, the team was able to improve the image quality and identify its location. Elena Adams is the DART mission systems engineer at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory in Laurel, Maryland. She said, "This first set of images is being used as a test to prove our imaging techniques. Adams added that the imaging instrument is what will guide the DART spacecraft to its asteroid target. In the final hours before the crash, the spacecraft will need to see and process images of the asteroid system as it travels by itself to the target without human involvement, NASA said. The DART operation will be captured in images taken by a CubeSat. CubeSats are small research spacecraft, also known as nanosatellites. The 14-kilogram CubeSat that will capture the images is called LeechaCube. It is a project of the Italian Space Agency. It was designed and built by the Italian space engineering company Argotech. LeechaCube is set to be deployed from the spacecraft about 10 days before the crash. LeechaCube is equipped with two separate cameras. They are designed to collect scientific data and inform the CubeSat's self-guiding system. The cameras will continually capture the asteroid crash as well as the resulting effects of the operation. Elisabetta Dotto is a member of the LeechaCube scientific team at the National Institute for Astrophysics in Rome. She said in a statement that she and other scientists are eager to receive and examine the images captured by the CubeSat. I'm Brian Lynn.
Today on The Making of a Nation, we continue the story of the American Revolution. Here is Steve Ember.
On July 4, 1776, the Second Continental Congress, meeting in Philadelphia, approved the Declaration of Independence. The new country, the United States of America, was at war with its former colonial ruler, Britain. Yet, not everyone in the former colonies agreed with the decision to declare independence. No one knows for sure how many Americans remained loyal to Great Britain. John Adams, the Massachusetts political leader, thought that about a third of the colonists supported independence, a third supported Britain, and a third supported neither side. Today, many historians think that only about 20% of the colonists supported Britain. Some colonists supported whichever side seemed to be winning. As many as 30,000 Americans fought for the British during the war. Others helped Britain by reporting the movements of American troops. Who supported Britain? These groups included people who were appointed to their jobs by the king. They also included leaders of the Anglican Church and people with business connections to the British. Professor Gordon Wood at Brown University in Rhode Island says many colonists from minority groups remained loyal to the king.
One of the problems of the American Revolution that emerged very quickly was the tyranny of the majority, which the founders, the revolutionary leaders, had not anticipated. But I think we're seeing the problems that emerge when you overthrow an authoritarian leader and you're going to have a relatively democratic society, then protecting the minority becomes a problem.
Other people remained loyal because they did not want change or because they believed that independence would not improve their lives. Some thought the actions of the British government were not bad enough to bring about a rebellion. Others did not believe that the rebels could win a war against a nation as powerful as Britain. American Indians disagreed among themselves about the revolution. Congress knew it had to make peace with the Indians as soon as the war started. If not, American troops might have to fight them and the British at the same time. To prevent trouble, American officials tried to stop settlers from moving into Indian lands. In some places, the Indians joined the Americans, but generally they supported the British. They expected the British to win. They saw the war as a chance to force the Americans to leave their lands. At times, the Indians fought on the side of the British, but left when the British seemed to be losing the battle. The Americans did not forget that the Indians chose to fight for the British. When the war was over, the Americans felt they owed the Indians nothing. African slaves in the colonies were also divided about which side to join during the American Revolution. Thousands of slaves fought for the British. The British offered them freedom if they served in the army or navy. Some American states also offered to free slaves who served, and hundreds of free blacks fought on the American side. Many slaves, however, felt their chances for freedom were better with the British. At least 5,000 blacks served with the colonial American forces. Most had no choice. They were slaves, and their owners took them to war or sent them instead of the owners' sons. Other slaves felt that a nation built on freedom might share some of that freedom with them. In the South, many slave owners kept their slaves at home rather than send them to fight. Later in the war, when every man was needed, many slaves drove wagons and carried supplies. Those who served in the colonial army and navy were not separated from whites. They fought side by side with whites during the American Revolution. But historians say most slaves spent the war as they always had, working on their owners' farms. The American rebels called themselves patriots. Those who supported the British were known as Tories. Patriots often seized the property of Tories to help pay for the war. They also kidnapped the slaves of Tories to use as laborers for the army. Many Tories were forced from towns in which they had lived all their lives. Some were tortured or hanged. In New Jersey, Tories and patriots fought one another with guns and sometimes burned each other's houses and farms. Some historians say the American Revolution was really the nation's first civil war. The Revolution divided many families. Jane Gordon at the Massachusetts Historical Society tells of a woman named Phoebe. Phoebe was married to a patriot, but her brother was a Tory.
And we think about what it must have been like for Phoebe in the middle between her husband and her brother. So that's a perfect example of a family that was split.
The patriots were also split among themselves in their thinking. The colonies did not really think of themselves as one nation.
They saw themselves as independent states, trying to work together toward a common goal. Historian Gordon Wood says, at first, the United States was more like the European Union is today.
When Jefferson said, my country, he meant Virginia. John Adams said, my country, meant Massachusetts.
This meant that Congress could not order the states to do anything they did not want to do. Congress could not demand that the states provide money for the war. It could only ask for their help. George Washington, the top general, could not draft men into the army. He could only wait for the states to send them. Washington showed that he was a good politician by the way he kept Congress and the 13 states supporting him throughout the war. Just as Americans did not all agree about the war, the British people did not agree about it either. Many supported the government's decision to fight. They believed that the war was necessary to rescue loyalists from the Patriots. Others did not think Britain should fight the Americans because the Americans had not invaded or threatened their country. They believed that Britain should leave the colonies alone to do as they wished. King George was not able to do this, however. He supported the war as a way to continue his power in the world and to rescue British honor in the eyes of other national leaders. Whichever side British citizens were on, there was no question that the war was causing severe problems in Britain. British businessmen could no longer trade with the American colonies. Prices increased, taxes did too, and young men were forced to serve in the Royal Navy. At the start of the war, the British believed that the rebellion was led by a few extremists in New England. They thought the other colonies would surrender if that area could be surrounded and controlled. So they planned to separate New England from the other colonies by taking control of the Hudson River Valley. The British changed their plans after they were defeated in the Battle of Saratoga in New York State. Historian Gordon Wood says the British loss changed the nature of the war.
The French feel at this point that the Americans might make it, and therefore they throw in their support. Once the French come on board, then the British are really panicked. At that point, they offer the Americans everything the Americans had wanted, save independence. But it was too late.
The British experienced many problems fighting the war. Their troops were far from home across a wide ocean. It was difficult to bring in more troops and supplies. Gordon Wood says the distance across the Atlantic was one reason the British lost the war.
Even though they were the most powerful nation in the world, had a superb army, and of course completely controlled the seas, and they were dealing with the ragtag army of George Washington and a bunch of militia, and they couldn't do it.
General Washington's army had its own problems, too. Congress never had enough money. States often did not do what they were supposed to do. And citizens were not always willing to fight. Soldiers were poorly trained and would promise to serve for only a year or so.
And that's our program for today.
Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm